And welcome to Talk It Out Radio. This is Timothy Reagan, your host. And this is a very special, timely political episode of Talk It Out Radio here on KPFA. The title of this episode, The Second Ever Empathy Listening Circle with two candidates for the United States House of Representatives. Now, why is this so amazing? Because you are about to hear two candidates competing for a seat in your United States House of Representatives, challenging Nancy Pelosi for her seat in the primary election here in California that happens in 2 days, June 7th, 2022. Now, Mike Zonta, our fellow citizen, just like you and me, invited all the candidates and the incumbent, Nancy Pelosi, in multiple formats, repeated times, just to sit down on Zoom and to talk and listen to each other. Nancy Pelosi's office didn't respond, and candidates John Dennis and Jeffrey Phillips both declined to participate. But two candidates accepted this bold and courageous invitation, Shahid Buttar and Bianca Krieg. Shahid and Bianca sat down together on May 22nd, and you're going to hear them speaking and listening to each other with respect and honesty and depth in a simple process of speaking and listening called an empathy circle. Now, if you live in the California Congressional District 11, listen up, San Francisco, that's you. Everyone else, please check out this conversation. It's inspiring. This is what is possible in politics these days. If you are caught by the dangerous illusion that people can't talk anymore with people of difference, you know, with respect and collaboration, then listen up. It happens here and now in this episode of Talk It Out Radio on KPFA. Now remember, this is Talk It Out Radio, your local how-to skills program dedicated to creating connection and understanding across differences between people so that real and natural compassion and collaboration and teamwork can happen so that we can all work together to create a world that works for life. So let's begin and listen to this excerpt from this recent Empathy Circle with Shahid Buttar and Bianca Krieg, candidates for the United States Congress from here in San Francisco, California. Enjoy. Welcome to the Empathy Circle. Shahid Buttar and Mike Zonta, and I'm Timothy Reagan. This is an Empathy Circle for congressional candidates just before the California primary for Congressional District 11, City and County of San Francisco. The intention here is for candidates to gather, to express themselves to one question, which is, why should people vote for me? Or to speak to whatever is on your mind and heart. And though, to be heard to your satisfaction when you speak. This is different than a debate or an argument or competitive inquiry, right? This is an opportunity to demonstrate listening as well as expressing. And so if you'll look around our virtual room, not all the candidates are here, not even a representative for the incumbent. And from my perspective, you know, of course, I'm a little bit disappointed because this model of dialogue is so rich and allows folks to, from my perspective, get to a deeper level of expression and understanding, and to demonstrate our skill of listening, which is an important skill in representative government. And so anyway, I just want to say welcome. Shahid Buttar, you are the only candidate here who are willing to participate in this particular round of an empathy circle. And so I'm strongly grateful for your presence. I want to give Mike Zonta also a warm welcome and a deep level of gratitude for the effort, the hours of effort, and the bold and courageous invitation to candidates and our incumbent to have a conversation like this. And Mike, that's not easy, to organize something that in a way is progressive, but it also is kind of essential in how human beings work, right? You have a vision for this, and I want to thank you for your effort. Yeah, thumbs up. So in a moment, I'll ask both of you to introduce yourselves. But so for this process, here's how it basically works. Each of us, including myself as a facilitator, have a chance to express ourselves for 5 minutes and be heard by a certain other member of the circle that we choose. I'll be timing. During that exchange, the speaker will get to speak and say whatever is on their mind or heart. The intention for this circle, Shahid, is for you to be able to speak to why people should vote for you for a seat in our National House of Representatives. The others of us will speak to what's on our mind. The listener has an opportunity to respond and reflect their understanding of what the speaker is trying to say. The speaker then gets to correct and really speak until the speaker feels and knows they've been heard and understood within that 5-minute window. After that 5 minutes is done, the speaker gets to relax. The listener becomes the new speaker. That speaker has 5 minutes to express whatever is on their mind and heart to another person who they request to be their listener. And the process moves forward like that. We're going to shoot for an hour for this particular conversation. And as you'll see, you'll have a chance to come around and speak. And every round, the conversation tends to grow in deep. I want to remind speakers to pause often and give your listener a chance to try to express back what they've understood so the speaker then can clarify. The intention here is to have that and know that experience of being fully heard to your satisfaction in small bits of time. Okay, so to begin, Shahid Buttar, I would invite you to speak to this question. Why should people vote for you as a representative in our United States House of Representatives for Congressional District 11 here in California with our impending primary on June 7th? Why should people vote for you? Or of course, share whatever's on your mind and heart in this moment. Before you begin, you'll be speaking to me. I invite you to speak to me okay. So I can demonstrate the listening and how that works. And okay. I'll also track time. Go ahead.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you, Timothy, for the warm welcome, for the structure. And I want to particularly share gratitude with Mike. You shared this as well, but I see in, we talked a little bit about this before we got started, but I just see in the fact of any dialogue around an election, a positive social good. And in addition, this particular model seems innovative and new. I haven't had an opportunity to be a part of a dialogue like this before, so I appreciate that. I particularly appreciate it, and I'm grateful for the context, which this event in the context of the broader institutional failure of the media establishment to show up for work. There's an election currently underway in which I'm a candidate. The voting period lasts for another 2 weeks and 2 days, and not a single print journalism outlet serving San Francisco has covered the race once. And the only broadcast outlet to cover the race to this point is a single nonprofit pirate radio station that only serves the mission. And the abdication, not just by the corporate media, but even the so-called independent press, of even a pretense of democratic participation, to me, represents a crisis in democracy well beyond the one I'm running for. And again, all the more reason I'm just grateful for the chance to share ideas in this forum.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, I'd like to capture some of that, see if I got it. You are in a state of gratitude because you're appreciating the social good and the benefit of dialogue, particularly in a setting where you are seeing, from your perspective, media, both independent, corporate, whatever, is missing, is falling down on their duty, is missing the an in-depth coverage of, in San Francisco, of the challengers for Nancy Pelosi's seat, like missing analysis, coverage, and everything. And so you're disappointed about that. And so therefore, this particular kind of dialogue for you is an opportunity to move through or beyond that. Did I get some of that?
You nailed it. If there was a quibble I had, the lawyer brain comes out of me, where you noted like in-depth coverage, I would be happy for any at all. Wow. And it's not even so much me and the media's failure. It's like the crisis to our community that goes unseen because the agents of discourse themselves aren't there. You know, it's like the collapse of our democracy. You know, there's a lot of alarm about democracy being in crisis in Washington, and Democrats will say it's the Trump people and it's the insurrectionists, and it's like our democracy faces way deeper threats than that. And you know, a big one is just the fact that the press, despite having the protections in the First Amendment, just literally does not show up for work in this country.
The press, despite having the protections of the First Amendment, from your perspective, is not showing up for work, and that has dire consequences for our democracy.
That's right. I feel fully heard. Thank you.
Okay. Well, you got another minute and a half. If there's anything else on your mind you want to share, please, I invite you to take your time.
I'll in the spirit of the gratitude piece I see in Mike and the organizing impetus behind this gathering, the continuing reverberation of the Occupy movement. I was very much a part of it, more on the East Coast, frankly, than the West Coast, but I happened to be touring the country at the time. I was leading a nonprofit, so I got to visit 20 of the different sites, you know, in the few months that the occupations were active. And so I got, you know, full immersion in the movement, and to see its continuing reverberations a decade later, from the calls to still cancel student debt, which are now, you know, finally reaching the White House, to just the participation of all the different networks, from the Occupy Homes movement, which sort of sprung from the Occupy community, the spirit of mutual aid that's been revived in the last 2 years of the pandemic. I see that very much as a continuation of the movement's vision. And I think this gathering is another example of that. So thanks for holding that flag as well.
Yeah, so I hear you expressing some sincere gratitude for Mike, who you perceive as really carrying that flag of the Occupy movement and some of the insights and practices and social good that came out of that, and through your experience touring and seeing that in place many years ago. Now, seeing this happen in the modern mutual aid, you know, systems where humans looking out for each other, and a couple of things I also missed there, but you're seeing some, you're just grateful. And you're saying this dialogue is almost one of the gifts or benefits of what came out of Occupy, where I imagine dialogue itself like this, where there's intentional listening, has a powerful benefit. And I know I missed a little bit.
Fully heard, yeah, totally. Thank you.
Okay, so now I am the speaker?
You're the speaker, yeah.
Okay, so I'll choose Shahid to be my listener.
I'm honored.
Okay, well, I'm really, I had no idea how this event was gonna go. I was hoping that a few more people would show up. And I'm really thankful that Shahid did show up, and also Timothy, that you're showing up as a facilitator. Because even with a small group of three of us, I think we can demonstrate to those that want to witness the YouTube or the Facebook, or to listen to you on your Talk It Out show on KPFA, that this kind of thing can be done. And maybe it has to start with three people, but it can go on to four and five, and all the candidates being included. Until at one time in our future, I hope it becomes, you know, like we take for example that, yeah, there's going to be presidential debates. And yeah, there's going to be an empathy circle for all the candidates. It's just something we do as a culture. So I'll stop there.
I hear you saying that maybe there was some uncertainty stepping in as to how the vision would materialize, and maybe a little echo of some of the disappointment I heard Timothy mention in terms of wishing that maybe we had some others with us to help flesh out that vision. But you see in the opportunity among us who are here a chance to plant a seed, maybe that can grow and hopefully become a thing that can become part of our civic culture, and that you could see being part of the expectation of the people could have a chance to hear their representatives auditioning how they hear.
Right. That's why I was so thrilled when I saw the YouTube of that Edwin Rooch had done with District 8, which Timothy also facilitated. And there was three candidates that showed up for that. Edwin being one of them. And I thought, wow, these candidates are running against each other, and yet they are allowing themselves to be part of a listening circle where they have to listen to each other and respect each other. and see what happens, rather than, you know, coming in with a debate with prepared talking points or something like that, or trying to undermine your opponent. This is something that you really can't prepare for what you do in an empathy circle, because it has to be pretty hot at the moment of your speaking.
I hear you saying that you saw the forum that Timothy played a similar role in for the 8th Congressional District, and you liked what you saw there and saw the mutual respect model, a different kind of exchange, perhaps. And I kind of got the picture that you were describing the conversation as having a life unto its own. I'm not sure if I'm reading into what you were saying, but what I picked up, at least, is that you were describing a conversation that inspired you and that you wanted to see happen again here closer to home. Did I get any of that? Okay.
Right. That's right. And I was so thrilled the other day. I opened up my sample voting book and getting ready to vote. And I always thought that I was in Jackie Spears' district, which is District 14. But the voter pamphlet says, no, I'm in District 11. So I'm thrilled to be able to vote in this district. And I would say a lot of my vote is going to be based on those who turned out today, as opposed to those who did not.
Yeah, are you saying that the redistricting might have swept you from the what used to be the 14th into what then was the 12th and is now the 11th? For that story before, are there also from people who live down by like Balboa Park area, and that you're excited for the chance to vote for the seat that represents San Francisco, and that you're interested in this forum as an indication of, you know, an opportunity for you to discover who you might want to support.
Right. I think that by candidates showing up or not showing up, it's not as if the candidates didn't know, but they made a choice not to show up. And so that says to me, that gives me a lot of information about that candidate, and maybe to the viewers or listeners of this empathy circle, that will also be an important addition to the final judgment they make as far as who they want to vote for.
What I'm hearing you say is that you are observing that the other candidates had other places that they chose to be, and that the chance to exchange views and listen and demonstrate empathy or show themselves before the voters was not a priority for them. Yeah, I hope I'm getting some of that across.
I feel fully heard.
Thank you, Mike. Okay, so Shahid, you get to speak to either of us, whoever you'd
like. Right. Is it untoward to just keep the circle going where I would ask you, Timothy, to be my listener?
Yeah, no, it's fine, yeah.
Is that fine? Okay.
Either one of us, yeah.
I can see it falling into a pattern, but you know, maybe we can reverse it at some point. But
change it into time.
Yeah, this is a little bit meta, but yeah, the exercise is interesting insofar as, you know, as I hear Mike describing the conspicuous absence of both the incumbent in the race and my allies in the race to end the corruption of her dynasty, the disappointment in, I have this experience, you know, my first reflection was about the press not showing up for work, and I encounter a great many people simply not showing up for work. And I want to particularly draw the circle around the incumbent here, because, and maybe I'll just pause there before I dive in.
Right. Okay. Yeah. You're expressing more disappointment, and you were focused on the incumbent, Nancy Pelosi, and you said the corruption of her dynasty, and you want to draw some attention to her and her team at this moment. You were talking earlier about the press and missing opportunities that you see, and now you want to focus on Nancy Pelosi and her team. Is that right?
Her and the other candidates in the race. I mean, I should note that I have allies in the race to unseat her who, you know, to Mike's point, aren't here. And I've spent a lot of time over the course of the years now that I've sought trying to liberate our city's voice in Washington, noting that the oligarch who inhabits the seat has never debated a challenger in the 35 years that she has held it, which I just think is an absolute preposterous reflection of entitlement and privilege of the worst conceivable kind, and just to dovetail that with the assault on democracy that it implies, the disrespect for the district and for the voters that is implicit in not showing up for a debate for an entire generation. And so that all feeds back into my gratitude for this forum and my disappointment in my allies in the race for not taking advantage of the opportunity to at least offer their ideas to the public. Like, if you're not going to debate in public, I kind of think someone has no business running for office in the first place.
Mm. Yeah, you're seeing as a just a really strong failure, a missed opportunity, that Nancy Pelosi has not debated anybody in public for years and years now. And you said something like you're working to liberate the voice of San Francisco in Washington, and you have allies in the race to unseat Nancy Pelosi and, you know, and kind of her team's way of doing things. And so you're disappointed there. You wish your co-challengers could have at least shown up to engage in a dialogue like this as well. I'm wondering if there's a lot more there. I don't want to miss anything. Anything else that I missed that you'd like to make sure to be understood for?
If we're within 5 minutes and I have another, you know, thing to put on the table, just that going back to the incumbent, I see this city having dire needs, from the poisoning of Bayview and Hunters Point to the ongoing gentrification and displacement that have shifted the racial composition of our city dramatically. I don't think there's any other city in the country where 3/4 of the black residents have been removed in the last generation.
Okay, I want to pause there. You see two kind of dire, serious issues that are having very far-reaching consequences. Number one, the poisoning of Hunters Point, and that whole story and that whole kind of tragedy, I imagine you might say. But at the same time, gentrification. You're seeing 3/4 of the black residents leaving, and the whole character of the city changing through this process. It's really upsetting and not okay from your perspective. And I mean, you're wanting these issues to be able to be brought to a federal level because they're so wide-ranging or serious. Did I get that?
Yeah, I mean, the just on the last part about the wide-ranging, is just to offer a clarification there. The issue for me and how it relates to the federal level is simply that the federal government has wider reach, greater resources, and it's the thing I've spent more time fighting. I've spent most of the last 20 years fighting the federal government under administrations from both parties, either from San Francisco or in Washington, D.C., and so I'm basically auditioning to help how I know how to help. Mm-hmm. And the thing I know much better, frankly, than I know the Board of Supervisors is Congress, because I spent a lot more time fighting Congress than I ever have spent fighting the Board of Supervisors.
Got it. You have been and you are a fighter. And in those fights and those scrappy engagements, you've learned a lot for how to get things done, express, you know, influence, and you want to bring that to bear to help the well-being of the people of San Francisco, particularly around the issues you've mentioned. But yeah, you're like, I've been there, I'm in there, I'm auditioning, and you know, will you have me? I'd like to fight for you.
Thank you. I feel fully heard, and that you even said it better, I think, than I did. So thank you.
Okay. You think I said that better than you. Okay. Well, I get to speak next. I'm going to debate that. But okay. So thank you very much. And you feel fully heard. Okay.
I do. Thank you.
Now we go to the next step. I'll be the next speaker. Let's see. Mike, I'd love to speak to you. Is that okay?
Okay.
Okay. Great. All right. I'm just appreciating taking a moment to breathe here and allow things to bubble up. The way I like to express myself is speak from the gut or the heart combined with my brain. So there's a certain pace that I actually appreciate going at. And many of my teachers have taught me about pace. So part of this process means I could take a few minutes and just even pause and consider what's most important to me in this moment. So I'm just appreciating that this process allows for that. Because I believe, and my experience is, so much is lost when our pace increases. So much meaning and insight and valuable reflection and so many gifts of awareness are lost in a frantic or, you know, rigorous pace. of debate, for example, right?
Can I feedback?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're just taking a pause here because you like to do that. You think that you're waiting for things to bubble up, and that a lot of times when the pace is so quick, we lose things. And this is something you've experienced, and you've had teachers over the years that have shown that in order to speak from the heart and not just the head, it's important to not race through what you're trying to say.
Thank you so much. Mike, I really feel heard there. Thank you. Yeah. There is a quote I heard a long time ago that I like this. I've got a really busy and challenging and scary day ahead. I better meditate an extra hour in the morning before the day gets going. So it's that principle of pace and depth, even more needed when things are intense and pressured. So
if you're going to have a real stressful day, then you know you're going to have to meditate 1 hour more in the morning. So I've heard that before too. I think that's very good.
Yeah, that's it. Just the main point that this is paradox. When things are really tough and intense, we almost need to slow down and go deeper for our resources and our collective resources. Yeah, it's almost like when democracy is even more important.
Yeah. So when things are really tough and moving at a frantic pace, that's when it's really more important to slow down and get in touch with a part of ourselves that may be able to have answers that we might not normally get to.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Mike. I feel fully heard. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to reverse the circle and ask Timothy to be my listener.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think that's a really great point that one of the things I was so amazed, I was in an empathy circle the other day, and a woman from England, which is another great point about empathy circles, is all around the world, you know. So this woman from England was just sitting there pausing. It was her turn to speak, but she was just pausing like for 30 seconds or so, which seemed like an eternity. But I thought, oh, and she said, I just want to, you know, collect my thoughts and calm down for a minute. I thought, wow. We can do that too. I thought that's great.
Yeah. So you're like, wait a second. This woman from England was modeling a whole 30 seconds of silence. And for you, that was a lot. It was uncomfortable. It was edgy. And you're like, wait, we can do this? Like, it reminded you of that capacity that we have to take time.
Right. Yeah. Yesterday, I attended an empathy circle, interfaith, no faith empathy circle, and one of the points that was brought out was that Edwin was concerned about how do we harvest some of the ideas that we come up with in these empathy circles. And someone else in the circle said, really what we're harvesting, what we seem to be harvesting in an empathy circle is our appreciation for each other. And it seems that in every empathy circle I've been in, I come away with a much greater appreciation for the other people involved in the empathy circle. And that's why those that did not show up today have lost out on not only my empathy, but the empathy of everybody that's listening and viewing this circle.
So yeah, you were hearing somebody talk, kind of lament, well, we're getting all these fun ideas. Edwin, actually, one of the main champions of this method, right, of empathy circling, but he's saying, oh my gosh, we had all these ideas, let's harvest. Somebody says, no, we're harvesting something different. We're harvesting maybe goodwill or companionship or human connection. We're getting actually closer to the other beings here. And Mike, I hear you saying, and what a missed opportunity for the incumbent and the other candidates in this political race, the House of Representatives, for them not to be here. Missed out on your understanding and empathy, and also a mutual human relational understanding and empathy. And that's a loss. That's sad.
Yeah, but it's very exciting to know that this is a possibility that we have in our future campaigns. I mean, it can be used in all kinds of different areas, but in our future political campaigns, will we have an empathy circle between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders and anybody else that wants to be part of it? And this will tell us a hell of a lot more, I think, about the candidates than any of the formats we've had before.
Yeah, so the empathy circle process, imagining, you know, Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton or anybody else, could just reveal so much more about who these candidates are. And therefore can maybe help us all, you know, elect somebody who can best serve us, something like that.
Yes, I feel fully heard.
Wow, cool. Okay, so now I was a listener, so now I'm the speaker again. Of course, Shahid, I'd like to speak to you, if that's okay.
Yeah, I'm honored.
Okay, we'll continue. I just want to say I love that moment when Mike just said it. Yes, I actually feel fully heard. Whoa, wait a second. I just met Mike today, and I just was with him for 5 minutes, and he looked at me and he said, I feel fully heard. That's amazing. Come on, it's not that hard to actually fully hear another human being. If you set up a little structure, a little agreement, maybe a little time frame, okay, great. So I don't know, I love that moment. It's a pretty cool moment. Like I can actually hear somebody I don't even know.
I hear you expressing being jazzed at the feedback, seeing it land, you know, somebody in the, I think I hear you saying that maybe Mike felt seen if not heard, and the profundity of to be acknowledged and to be seen and to be heard, and how facile it was to create that very profound interaction, particularly by creating a little structure and a little mechanics around it.
Exactly.
Did I get any of that right?
Yes, exactly. Okay, so I'm going to pause my time here. You got it. It looks like Bianca Krieg is signing on.
Great.
And so I'd like to pause the circle and invite her in and let her know where we're at and go from there. How's that sound?
Great.
Okay, great. Bianca. Bianca Krieg. Greetings.
Hi.
I'm happy. I'm Timothy. Hi.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Oh, my God. Great. And then Mike is here. Of course, Shahid Muttar is here, and we are recording this session. We've been in a wonderful dialogue, and we've been going through the process of the Empathy Circle so far. Oh my God, we're so happy to see you. We paused, and we're just kind of continuing the process. We are sad, of course, Bianca, that the incumbent and other candidates in this race were unable to make this opportunity. And we're also stoked that you made it as well. And so what I want to do right now, Bianca, now that you're here, now that we have two candidates, two challengers, Nancy Pelosi, I would want to get back to the intention of this particular circle to give you a chance to speak and be fully heard to answer this question. Why should people vote for me? And what I would encourage you to do is, since there's each of you, Bianca and Shahid, both challengers, if you could speak to each other. And then the other could hear, okay, here's why you're saying, you know, people should vote for you, and demonstrate that listening. And start with that particular question, because I know that voters and, you know, citizens would, I'm sure, love to hear that exchange. And in an empathy circle, you're absolutely welcomed and honored. Your freedom and self-determination are honored to speak whatever's on your mind and heart. So you get to use your time however you want. This is true free speech within a warm agreement and in a container, right? So that would be my invitation. So maybe we could start there. And since you just arrived, Bianca, I invite you to begin. And if you want to speak to Shahid or to me or Mike, if you wanted to, and we'll be with you for 5 minutes to make sure we reflect back and that you're fully understood. So Bianca, what do you say? You want to give it a try?
Absolutely. Thank you. And thanks for walking me through all that.
Yeah. Yeah, just pick one person to speak to, and then that person will reflect what they're hearing to make sure that you're understood fully. I just heard Shahid say he'd be honored to listen to you. Is that something you'd like to do?
Of course. Thank you.
Okay, cool.
All right. So, like I said, money is paramount. Money solves 100% of socioeconomic problems. And that's what everything else is comfort politics, you know, renaming schools, pulling down statues, all that stuff. You know, it's nice, but it's just ultimately a waste of time and a distraction. What we really need to do is give people serious help. You know, nobody wants to have a rationality for racism. That's an academic concept. people of color who are disenfranchised want serious help. They want economic help.
What I hear you saying, Bianca, is that there's a lot of kind of performative distraction. And you mentioned like pulling down monuments, I think, and contrasting that with the material outcomes and the need for resources, ultimately money, to hit the ground, and particularly in communities of color, you named, and how resources and money are the solution to many of the crises that our communities face. Did I get some of that right?
Yeah, all of it. And that wasn't projected to you, really. But, you know, I would say, I gotta be brutal right now. You know, every woman that we've talked to who knows Shahid's name, unfortunately, is not going to vote for him. And whether or not that's justified or not, another matter, but, you know, voters in the city are women, and 40% of the voters are LGBT, and we tend to stick to our own. And as a transgender woman, we draw our own with that. But
what I hear you saying is that that there's a large percentage of the voters that are women and trans folks, and that my character assassination was widely internalized by some of those folks, and that you feel like among some of the women you've talked to, there's a reticence to vote for me on account of some of the disinformation that we confronted in 2020.
Whether or not it's information or disinformation, I can't say. But what I do know is that media is garbage. The media is not being fair. Frontline piece was garbage. I was extremely disappointed in PBS and the Frontline for not giving you props for your accomplishment in making it to the general election. I think that's unparalleled. And that should have been mentioned, and it wasn't. And it was very disappointing.
So I heard you saying that the media is garbage. You know, that there is a the Frontline piece exploring Nancy Pelosi's career was particularly emblematic of the media being garbage and its failure to fairly depict her history, or for instance the fact that she faced another Democrat in the general election and in 2020 for the first time.
And, you know, also, I've been calling them out, certain players, and, you know, we all see, you know, the Christine nonsense, and I call that candidate seeding, and I think it's wrong, and I be sure to mention those people to the Pulitzer Prize Committee, as well as, you know, because I'm an actress, I'm also on the board of the Emmys. Those people should not be given awards, okay, because they're clearly seeding things. Whenever they say there's reports of this and that, I basically assume they're just making that up.
I hear you saying that the journalists are playing a game in planting suggestions in the electorate about people to follow Nancy Pelosi, presuming that she would retire at her own choice, and that the particular reports about her daughter being her successor are especially offensive, both in... Well, I'll just say that's particularly offensive. You were noting how they were offensive in planting the seed and steering the ship more than reporting the facts. Did I get some of that right?
Yeah.
Thank you, Bianca. That's 5 minutes.
Oh, really? I have more to say.
I know. No, we'll do one more round after this. Okay. So what I want to do is Shahid now has listened, so now he's got a chance to answer the question. You know, why should folks vote for me, or whatever's on your mind and heart.
Thanks, Timothy. Bianca, if you're willing, I'd love to speak to you.
Yep.
Cheers. Going to the prompt that Timothy offered in terms of, you know, why I would invite folks to vote for me, I see a lot of folks in 2022 coming to an awareness of our social crises, whether it's money in politics, whether it's human rights abuses, the international belligerence of our military-industrial complex, the climate crisis. These crises are growing inescapably obvious to a great many people, and I offer myself as a voice for the city because I've spent 20 years fighting those issues from San Francisco to Washington. I can pause there.
Okay, so Bianca, your reflection of that, just to help Shahid know he's been heard.
He is offering himself as a voice in the political landscape for the last 20 years. How's that?
Right on. That's fair. And as I look back on that history and the challenges that we're confronting today, the pieces of my history that I feel like were most emblematic of what I would like to do for the city going forward were fighting for marriage equality in 2004, long before Democrats were willing to stand for the rights of our neighbors, and then fighting the surveillance state in the 15 years after that and putting in place the first restrictions on it across the country. Those were sort of two examples of my advocacy that I offer as sort of examples, receipts, perhaps.
The surveillance state is bad. I mean, I couldn't agree with that more.
Okay, Bianca, just in this setting, do your best to just summarize what Shahid's trying to put out there in terms of how you understand it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I heard that there was a lot of corruption within the Democratic Party. And believe me, I have lived that too.
Hold on, Bianca, not about you. Just what is Shahid saying right now from his perspective?
Corruption in the Democratic Party and the surveillance state as an outcropping of that.
Yeah, the one piece maybe that's just not getting across, but in terms of just wanting to make sure it's heard, is just the advocacy for LGBT communities starting in, you know, an era long before Democrats were willing to stand for our neighbors.
Sticking up for LGBT communities before others would.
Yeah, thanks for that. And the other thought I'd have here, just in terms of the offering that we present the city, is just the voice of someone who's had the chance, and I say this, you know, with tongue in cheek, but the chance to experience the bottom of the boot. You know, when my family lost our home when I was 16, that it was the last thing I would have chosen. I would never wish it on anyone, and I learned a great deal from it. And to have had the chance to struggle for 10 years to get my undergrad degree, to have the chance to struggle through character assassination, you know, our struggles, I think, forge us into stronger steel. And, you know, I've had the chance to be put through, you know, for better or worse, more than a few fires.
Is it my turn? I need to respond to, or to show up.
Yeah. So you just summarize what you hear him trying to get across there.
His struggles are painful, and he would not wish them on others, but they have made him stronger all the more for it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Bianca. Yeah, I feel fully heard.
Right on. And thank you, Bianca, for diving into this process. We appreciate that. Okay, so what I'd like to do, since we're focusing on your experience, both of you being able to be heard fully and equally in this particular format, I'd like you to go ahead, Bianca, and you can speak to any of us to be heard for 5 minutes on whatever's on your mind or heart, or why people should vote for you.
All right. Well, I'll still stick with Bitar because we're the only principals in the election.
Perfect.
I don't want to make it about identity politics, but, you know, I would be the first congresswoman in the world, well, in the United States.
I'm sorry, your voice broke up there. Can you repeat that again? You would be the first
transgender congresswoman in the United States. As we all know, that was something Pelosi robbed from the nation her first time around, running against a gay county supervisor in Harry Britt.
Noting that you'd be the first trans member of Congress in the country,
yeah.
And that was something our community's been denied in the past.
Yeah. Not just our community, but the LGBT community worldwide, in the nation. I've said many times that we need actual enforcement of civil protections that we have. You know, if we need what I call 911 service of injustice, a 911 number that you can call and get help, and somebody can come down, take your information, investigate it, prosecute it, and provide some sort of a remedy. We really don't have anything close to that. But more.
Can I pause there just to make sure I'm hearing you?
Go ahead.
I heard you describing a vision for a like a rapid response justice line where people can call and seek help for challenges needing resolution.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And because I believe fervently that government should be proactive in things like, you know, why don't we have like 911 dials, you know, connects via Skype to an ER doctor or something like that, so you can give it, you know, assistance to people on the street. You know, there's a whole host, you know, why can't we use drones to direct traffic so that, you know, emergency vehicles can get quick access to sites quicker? You know, they're not thinking this way. Government reacts. It's not proactive, it's reactive. And it's mostly about putting out fires instead of just, you know, pruning the forest before it becomes dangerous to begin with.
I hear you describing government responding only to crises rather than preventing them and sort of being behind the ball in terms of implementing opportunities for technology to better accentuate not just social services, but like core things. You know, you noted drones facilitating traffic enforcement. You had another example that's slipping. I want to make sure I grip.
Skyping directly to an ER
doctors. Right, right. Yeah, so leveraging technology and government to better address core functions that are failing, yeah. Did I get that right?
You did. You know, one more thing I'd like to direct that, you know, like Shahid said, he's a voice in the community for about 20 years. I'm a relative newcomer. I'm a national name, but not in political spheres. You know, I'm in the entertainment world, and before that, I was in engineering. But and I don't want a career change. I want this job. Shahid wants his career, and that's nice and everything. But what he has to do to align himself with that would make him a less desirable candidate than it would I. What I mean by that is, I don't give a crap about making friends in Congress or having long-term relationships. I said it in the ballot and I'm emphasizing it now. I'm either gonna come there and accomplish what I set out to do, or I'm gonna find the assholes who are holding us back. The Kristen Sinemas, the Mnuchins, and you know, and thanks to Buttigieg, we found about Kuilar. Let's find those people out, let's suss them out, and let's nail them and get them out of there. This is why they've been avoiding the pro-choice vote for 50 years, because they've been afraid of this exact kind of thing. And Pelosi has shown her colors in this respect. I told Trump how to bust Pelosi the first time around, and he used it, and that's what happened. During the last budget debate, before he left office, he upped her offer and she turned him down. I told him to do that. I told him she would show her true colors. She didn't want to have budget passed. She didn't care about the people that needed that money. She cared about, you know, making this man look like a jackass. Okay. And he does that just fine on his own.
Okay, I'm going to pause you there, Bianca, because the time's up. And I want to make sure that Shahid catches you there. So go ahead, Shahid.
Yeah, I heard you saying, Bianca, that the sort of the difference between going to Washington to make friends versus going to Washington to expose the people who are impeding the policy vision that that you propose, and you sort of mentioned like the Kristen Sinema, Joe Manchin, sort of as, you know, the obstacles to be removed. There's definitely more there I'm trying to grip.
No, I'm impressed you got that much. That was quite a rant I went on.
Oh, good.
Hey. Okay, good. So you got that much. And then in this moment, Bianca, do you feel fully heard for what you've been able to say?
Yeah.
All right. Cool. All right. So now we're moving towards the end of our time. Shahid, we're going to give you another chance to speak. You could speak to Bianca again or any of us for 5 minutes on the topic of why people should vote for you and or anything else that's on your mind and heart in this moment, you know. So right, go ahead and choose a listener if you like, and we'll go from there.
I'll speak to Bianca, if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
And I'll sort of, you know, reiterate where we started, is this gratitude for the forum. I'm really grateful that you're here and to the folks who brought us together to have an exchange that centers our respective perspectives rather than potential differences between them.
And I see Bianca in the chat saying agreed. So Bianca, how would you reflect that back, what Shahid just said from his perspective? How would you say that back?
He appreciates the forum. I appreciate the forum too. This is a great start. I'd love to have a lot more of these.
Yeah. Another piece I'd throw out there, this is a little bit less on the whole race, but just reflecting on the format and the discourse. Timothy, maybe half an hour ago, had reflected on what it might look like for someone in office to use a forum like this. And I just figured I'd throw this in the mix. There's a scholar, James Fishkin, who taught at different points at the University of Texas. I think he was at Stanford at some point, but he pioneered this model called deliberative democracy, which is it's not unlike this forum. If you imagine, for instance, to the extent the empathy circle aims to embody the sort of nonviolent communication and active listening, their deliberative democracy aims sort of similarly to get past the top line talking points that people offer. And so it's sort of like, to the extent, maybe what one contrast we might offer to what we're doing now is like polling. Polling is sort of a really reductive, simple way that people try to detect what the public thinks. This is a more kind of like engaged way, you know, to help see what people think. Deliberative democracy are like weekend-long sessions, kind of like mini conventions, but almost like mini legislatures, where the participants are drawn from across civil society. They have almost like town halls where issue-focused explorations with voices from different sides of debate. So they basically get to hear the pros and cons of different contested propositions. And then they often will have votes at the end. And one of the things that the scholars, including Fishkin, have documented is that people at least emerge from those processes with a great deal more understanding of nuance. And it seems at least to enable better decision making in those kinds of bodies. Now, you know, I don't think anything like this has been tried in a bigger scale, but there are at least efforts, I think, to try to emulate better listening in politics. And we've seen some of them bear some fruit.
Okay, that was a lot, Bianca. How would you distill some of that?
I would say more comprehensive discourse, scope, and empower the voter. How's that?
Right on. Elegantly said. Well said. Thank you. I feel fully heard.
Okay. But Shahid, you've got another minute and a half, a little over okay. That. So I'd love for you to continue, answer the question or anything else you'd like to express right now to Bianca.
I see the future at risk of being run off a climate cliff. I see capitalists with their hands around the throat of an entire planet and its capacity to support life. I see not just in Washington, but particularly our city's voice in Washington, support for Wall Street and the Pentagon before human rights, before climate justice, before our neighbors and their needs. And ultimately, that's why I'm here would hope to do everything I can to be helpful on our city's behalf.
Yeah, that cuts right to my humors. Look, I can't. You know, recurrate what you said back, but I feel the same way. Okay, I feel a step further. I feel like we're on the precipice of civil war if things don't change. You know,
okay, Bianca, I'm going to pause you there.
Sorry, I know I go off. I know,
Bianca, we love to hear exactly how you feel. And in this moment, it's just, I know it's hard, but catching Shahid for what he's saying and pointing to from his perspective.
Saying that it doesn't work, right?
Fairly said. I'll take
this
that.
Doesn't work. This doesn't work. We have to change things. This kind of trickle down economic, you know, everybody, you know, all, you know, one man on every man for himself is bull. Mm-hmm. We have to work collectively. We have to solve problems that are not going to be resolved with traditional paradigms. How's that?
I think you're fairly captured.
Yeah.
What I wanted to say there. I am just facing a little time pressure now because I have volunteers I have to meet.
We are about to finish right now. So what that means is a profound thank you, not just from me, and Mike Zonta, who organized this. Mike's right there hanging in with us. But for our listeners, the profound gratitude to each of you, Shahid Buttar and Bianca Krieg, here in San Francisco, Congressional District 11, challenging Nancy Pelosi for powerful representation from San Francisco across this country and world, really. Thank you for showing up for a dialogue and a process like this. And not just showing up, but being honest and listening in the same event. Thank you. So right at the end here, I heard a real reverence for what this process can be, but also for, I can't swear because this goes on the radio, but this stuff, a lot of it is not working and you each are stepping up. And so I honor you for not just your service, but your courage and your love. You're stepping into a wild time right now as leaders. So I honor both of you, Bianca and Shahid. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
It's been a blast. Let's do it again.
Hey, let's do it again. Let's do it again. I'm celebrating. I am. Come on. In the middle of all this, we have some relationality. And this is between two competing candidates, right?
Progressive candidates.
Two progressive and competing candidates, though. And so we just did this. So I'm very grateful. And Mike, I want to hear if you have any final thoughts before we finish up. You pulled this together. So go ahead.
I'm really thankful, really grateful that Shahid showed up, really grateful that Bianca showed up, and that you showed up, Timothy. I'm really grateful for what you did. And maybe we will do this for the general election.
And greetings, Talk It Out radio listener, back in the studio here. That was a political empathy listening circle. What is possible? What did you note? What did you hear? What did you learn? Please reach out to us by email at talkitout@kpfa.org and listen to this episode or any of our episodes online in the archives, also at kpfa.org. Come explore the skills of healthy human relationships with us next Sunday and every Sunday from 7 to 8 p.m. here on Talk It Out Radio. Goodbye for now. We're going to work it out. We're going to work it out.
KPFA has always been more than a radio station.
We're a local destination for discussion and connection.
When you turn on 94.1 FM or check out KPFA's website, you too belong to the Bay Area. Our local programming, news, analysis, culture, and alternative music is reflective of where we live, who we are today,
and how we're growing as a vehicle for community engagement.
Please donate today at kpfa.org. Thank you.
KPFA is on social media. Follow us on your favorite platforms for news headlines, live stream events, show info, and more. That's at KPFA 94.1 on Facebook and at KPFA Radio on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok.
This is for my folkers who got bills overdue. This is for my folkers, check, 1, 2. This is for my folkers, never live like a hog. Me and you, toe to toe, I got love for the underdog. This is for my folkers who got bills overdue. This is for my folkers, check, 1, 2. This is for my folkers, never live like a hog. Me and you, toe to toe, I got love for the underdog.
Boots Riley, a voice synonymous with passion, integrity, and vision. No other station has been bringing you voices like these for nearly 70 years, except KPFA.
You're listening to 94.1 KPFA, 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K24 8BR in Santa Cruz, and online worldwide at kpfa.org.